Any discussion of government spending can quickly get to some lightning rod terms like taxes and welfare and the government trough. Let's work to put those aside for now because our guest looked into government spending and not federal government spending on public goods. And he found a connection between the spending on things like parks and roads and libraries and the happiness that people report in places that have those public goods. Patrick Flavin is an associate professor of political science at Baylor University in Texas. He published his research in the journal Social Science Research under the title State Government Public Goods Spending and Citizens' Quality of Life. Let's get into the specifics. Pat Flavin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You note at the outset that there's plenty of research in the social sciences that set out to measure how public policy affects quality of life for society, but you saw a gap in the research. What did you see there?
Yes, so the limited work that there is on this type of question tends to look at more politically contentious spending, like welfare spending or public assistance spending. But there hadn't been any research on how what is arguably less contentious, and that is public good spending, how that might affect citizens' quality of life or how happy they are with their own life.
Did you approach this with any sense of trepidation? I can see there'd be a bit of a danger zone here if people start citing your research in ways you hadn't intended. But the idea that by saying that, hey, if you have more public spending, you have happier people can certainly just the idea, I'm sure, get some people annoyed right off the bat.
It does. I think in some ways this can be viewed as politically motivated or ideologically motivated research. But the approach that I take is to let the analysis sort of speak for itself. And going in, I kind of had an expectation. I thought that public good spending would probably boost happiness. But it certainly, you know, could have been that that wasn't the case. But the data, in fact, confirmed my expectation and showed that, yeah, spending on things like parks and other public goods really does seem to coincide or boost happiness.
So it sounds like it validated the hypothesis, but I mean, how intense is the effect, I guess, is one starting question.
Yeah, so it's a rather large effect. So the usual way to sort of parse out the relative importance is to compare it to other things that affect happiness. So for example, as you might expect, being healthier versus being sick. People that are healthier are happier. People that are married versus aren't married are happier. You can insert your own joke there. What I found was that public good spending wasn't quite as large as those two sort of common predictors of happiness, but it was a little more than half as large. And so what I take away from that is that it's a pretty substantively large finding, and especially important because things like marriage or health are maybe a little further removed from what the government can immediately do, certainly, but public good spending is something that we can actually affect through policy and the decisions that politicians make.
Is it a fairly close correlation, a direct link from dollars spent to self-reported well-being?
Yes. So the way that I approach the research is to try to account for all of the other factors that might also affect happiness. So to try to just isolate the direct effect of public goods spending. And so taking all these other factors into account and accounting for that states are different in all sorts of different ways, there does still seem to be a direct effect. I will say that the one limitation, which I think is always important to be upfront about limitations of research, is that what this doesn't have the power to say is with definite certainty to say that there's a causal relationship, right? To do that, we would need something along the lines of a medical trial, right, where we randomly decide some places are going to have more public good spending, some are going to have less, and then look at happiness. But that's, of course, very difficult to do in the real world. So short of that, this uses statistical techniques to try to approximate that. And so I do find a direct link between public good spending and happiness.
Okay, but that's an important point you bring up. You found correlation, but not necessarily causation.
Yes.
All right. Pat Flavin, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, associate professor of political science at Baylor. We're talking about state spending on public goods and what kind of happiness that derives for people. You can join us on the exchange with your thoughts on the question. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It sounds like this is such a wide open field to start with. That just in terms of designing the research and what numbers you'd look at, you'd have a heck of a time just figuring out what to include and what to leave out.
Yeah, I think it's a new, it's important, and it's an exciting field of research. Simply because usually when we have discussions about public policy, they're ideologically motivated in terms of someone saying we should have this or we should have that, or if we do look or try to examine the effects of policy, we look at things that are maybe indirectly related to well-being but aren't well-being themselves. So things like how do policies affect unemployment rates or economic growth or things of that nature. I think this goes right to the heart of the question and looks at the what we really want to know, and that is, does policy have an effect on people's well-being, how happy they report they are with their lives?
And lest anybody think that this was you looking at a two-week period or something, you chose a relatively long stretch of time. Tell us about the years you measured and why those were chosen.
Yes, so it's a 30-year time span, 1976 to 2006, which is important for a couple reasons. One, that by accounting for such a long period of time, you can statistically control for all sorts of things and account for other factors to try, again, to isolate the effect between public goods spending and quality of life. And it's also important because even though I think this is an important field of research, there simply aren't many surveys, public opinion surveys, that ask people how happy they are with their lives. It's relatively a recent development for surveys to start asking these sorts of questions. And so the general social survey, the survey that I use here, is one of the few, actually, that has data going back that far into the 70s. And so I think it gives us a longer picture of what's going on, as opposed to just looking at a single year or something like that.
And how specific, I'm curious to know, were the questions on the survey about the things that the people derive happiness from?
Yeah, so this is a very straightforward question that was just asked people how happy they are with their lives, and there was three response categories: very happy, somewhat happy, or not happy at all. And so people could put themselves into those into one of those three categories, which is in some ways limiting. And I think it sort of speaks to the fact that this question was included way back in the 70s. I think less was sort of known about well-being research, whereas now there are surveys coming out that not only ask people to maybe put themselves in a 0 to 10 scale when it comes to happiness, but it asks them, you know, those exact questions that you just posed. So what do they derive their happiness from? It might ask them, you know, did someone smile today? Did they laugh today? Did they do something they enjoyed during the day? And I think that provides an even more comprehensive picture of well-being. So I think going forward, there's going to be a lot more opportunities to really dive in deeper into this question of happiness.
All right, that's on the happiness end, and then of course we have the spending on public goods end of things. And you touched on this a bit already. You had to do some whittling. It's not about the overall dollar amount that your state government spends, is that right?
Correct. And so there have been studies that have looked at just sort of total government spending, but that can of course comprise a whole lot of different things. And so the reason I looked at public goods spending is that whether you're Democrat, Republican, liberal, or conservative, there are certain, I think, economic realities that public goods confront us with, and that is, absent government providing them in some way, shape, or form, it's unlikely the private market is going to provide them either adequately or in some cases at all. So the classic example, I don't get into it in this research, but at the national level, national defense, right? If it would be impossible for, say, to have a private, say, company that only protects some houses on a block and not others or something like that. And so that's, I think, legitimate function of government that regardless of how big or small you want government to be, you would say the government has a role in doing this. And so some of the things that I look at, roads, unless you would want to take it to the extreme and say we should have all toll roads or all private roads. I think roads are a legitimate function of government. Parks, unless you want to say we should have all private parks, legitimate function. Libraries, things like that. By looking at those, I think it's less politically contentious, because even if I think you're someone who would advocate for less government spending, smaller government, you would still acknowledge the need for government to provide these types of amenities, because otherwise we know that they just wouldn't be provided. They're not profitable to provide in the private market.
Which is why they're non-rivalrous and non-excludable, as you point out. These are things that don't get provided elsewise. It comes from government or it doesn't come at all.
Correct.
Pat Flavin, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a political scientist at Baylor University in Texas. He looked into how spending on public goods like roads, parks, libraries affects happiness of people, and he found a pretty close correlation in 30 years of numbers from 1976 to 2006. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, your thoughts on public goods spending and what you'd derive from it. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned welfare briefly as not being included. So it's we don't have direct payments to people, and education is not included as a public good either?
Right. So education is debatable, I think, whether it's it's a pure public good. I think you could probably make the argument that it is. I decided not to include it because it is something that's if, say, one student is, say, in a classroom, that is taking up resources that another student can't use. So I think it doesn't fit the technical definition of public goods in that one person using it is going to take away from another person using it. And so actually in the paper, I did look at some other alternative ways to measure, so including education spending. And kind of surprisingly, at least to me, when you included education spending, it didn't find a correlation there between how much states spend on education, public education, and happiness. So I think I don't think certainly that's not the last word on that question, but sort of going in, my goal was to confine public goods to the amenities or the services that are sort of classically thought to be non-rivalrous and non-excludable.
So does it? I mean, do you measure in terms of like proximity to the public goods? I'm close to a park. I'm close to a good road. Is it measured in things like dollars spent per capita? What are some of the other metrics you put in here?
Yeah. So in my research, it's measured as dollars spent as a proportion or as a percentage of the state's or the size of the state's economy, so to kind of account for the fact that some states can spend more, but some states are also have a higher cost of living or have higher incomes and things of that nature. And so what this measures is sort of the state's relative ability to provide these services. And so it is, I think, admittedly a rough measure in the sense that someone living in Texas, regardless of where they lived in Texas, would be assigned the same level of public goods spending, same as, you know, someone that was lived in Oregon or lived in California would be assigned the same public goods spending no matter where they lived in the state. So whether you lived, you know, right next to a park, or right next to a library, or you lived far away. And so I think that's the next step in this research, is to get more fine-grained at the either city or even neighborhood level, where we can really try to parse out or discover, is it just spending? Is it, you know, where people live? Is it proximity? Things of that nature. I will say there's been a couple studies that do seem to point to people are happier when they live more in closer proximity to things like parks. There hasn't really been any large-scale studies, so I think that's the next direction for this research.
Roads, not surprisingly, are a big one here, and this is usually the first thing people are going to complain about when there are potholes or when they can't get the way they're going on a regular basis. And you point out a couple of different examples in the research. I noticed Alaska being one, which, of course, is huge, and people have to travel long distances to get places. And then Maryland, on the other hand, which is not huge but has some traffic problems, and both seem fairly respondent to spending on roads.
Yeah, so this looks at sort of across all states, if states spend more or invest more, maybe a better way to think of it, in roads, whether that correlates with higher happiness. And I think my expectation going in was kind of along the lines of what you identified there as well, that is, if you're driving on poorly constructed roads, it makes commute times longer. I think that's going to lower happiness. It makes less time for things you enjoy doing. And so I think before even diving into any of the data, I think it was important to sort of sit back and think about why might we expect things like spending on roads? Why would we expect it to affect people's happiness? Sure, it might be a hassle, but do we really think it would have an effect on quality of life? And I think, in the sort of day after day, think about how much time an average person spends in a commute, it really does add up. And so I think that's why I wasn't surprised that when you sort of consider all these different factors that more spending does seem to relate to higher quality of life.
Let me understand again, is this state and local spending or just state spending?
So this is just state spending.
But some of these issues you're talking about, like parks, parks and libraries, certainly in our part of the world, and police protection too, as you list among one of the public goods, tend to be provided by local dollars rather than state dollars.
Yeah, so it varies sort of state by state. So different states step back here. All states provide at least some support to local governments to provide things like libraries and parks, but you're absolutely right that depending on the state, some localities will provide a proportion, sometimes even a majority of the funding for some of these amenities. But I think it'd be incorrect to say that they're solely local spending priorities. Certainly, the local government pitches in, but the state's also providing funding, usually in the form of, say, grants to local governments to do this sort of spending. And so just to sort of circle back to what I had responded to in a previous question, I think that underscores the need for more fine-grained analysis, mm-hmm. to look at these local, because I think you're absolutely right that local governments are just sort of helpless in all of this. They're making spending decisions too. And so you could imagine within a single state that we could look at whether cities that invest more in these things, whether that relates to higher quality of life.
Pat Flavin, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an associate professor of political science at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. We're talking about his research into state government public goods spending and quality of life as self-reported by citizens. This is a 30-year period from 1976 to 2006, so not only he just took a snapshot. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Pat, did you look into income distribution? I mean, are we a lot more likely to see good roads and parks in areas where incomes are higher, for example?
My suspicion would be yes. So I don't look at that in the paper, but I think that's why it's important to, at least the way that I decided to measure this, is to calibrate it to how much a state's relative ability to pay. So you could imagine a higher income state would have more resources to provide these goods. And so right off the bat, the question is, how do you account for income and then try to zero in on public goods spending? And so in the paper, at both the individual level, but also maybe more importantly at the state level, it accounts for that some states have higher incomes, some states have higher versus lower unemployment rates. And so by accounting for those factors and by measuring it, public good spending as a state's relative ability to pay, it tries to get around or control or account for that. That very fact that some states are just have more means at their disposal, and to try to zero in, isolate just public goods spending based on a state's relative ability to provide those goods.
There were certainly some fluctuations in the economy in the years between 1976 and 2006, and certainly some changes in political power. And I wonder how responsive, A, the spending, B, the reports of self-reports of happiness were through the political and economic fluctuations.
Yeah, so I think that's why it's important to look at such a long time frame. So we do know, not in this and my specific paper, but in other papers that look at happiness, we know that unemployment is a major driver of unhappiness, both at the national level and at the individual. So living, people on average are going to be less happy when the unemployment rate is high. And individuals, as you might imagine, are going to be less happy when they're unemployed versus when they're gainfully employed. In my paper, what I attempt to do in the analysis is account for year-to-year fluctuations, or sort of statistically pull those out, so that, for example, if the economy, in 2008, but that goes beyond the analysis, but pick a time, 1990, 91, and there was, say, a dip in the economy, that's affecting everyone overall. And so there are ways to statistically account for that, to try to remove that fluctuation, because you're absolutely right. The national conditions are going to affect people's happiness, but they tend to do so in a pretty uniform way. That is, you see sort of a nice trend as unemployment goes down, happiness tends to go up, and vice versa.
Less than a minute left now, Pat. Do you caution people against taking your paper going, see, we need to spend more money on public goods?
Well, so yeah, so typically when I publish a paper, I'll get some maybe emails from other professors that study the same topic. But I received a lot of emails from librarians and from other local government types that wanted to basically use it for just exactly that purpose. And so I sort of gave them the standard academic line, which is, this is just one piece of evidence. I think it does say something important, but it's not the final word. So I think more research needs to be done on the topic.
All right. This one is called State Government Public Goods Spending and Citizens' Quality of Life, published in the February issue of Social Science Research by Pat Flavin, an associate professor of political science at Baylor University. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.